Alfred Nobel was a Swedish chemist. You may have heard of him. He invented dynamite in the 19th century. He quickly became rich and famous as an arms and explosives manufacturer. Now, there's a widely told story, and I'm not sure if it's true. I couldn't find out if it was actually true. But the story goes like this, that one day a newspaper mistakenly printed Alfred Nobel's obituary, mistaking him for his brother who had recently died. The obituary described Alfred as a merchant of death, saying he became rich by finding ways to kill more and more people faster than ever. Legend has it that when Nobel read his own obituary, imagine reading your own obituary, it acted, as I'm sure it would, as a huge wake-up call for his life. He was appalled that people thought of him in this way, and so he set about for the rest of his life to have a better legacy. It included him donating the majority of his wealth to found the Nobel Prizes, which are given to people who are seen to benefit humanity in different ways. So we have the Nobel Prize for Peace, for Physics, for Chemistry, for Literature, and so on. But you can imagine that seeing your own obituary would be a great wake-up call for your life, wouldn't it? You can see how it would stir you, especially if it was something, said something like that, merchant of death. You could see how it might stir you to change, stir you to action. Now, hopefully no one here has had an obituary accidentally printed about them, but I'm sure many of us here have had our own types of wake-up calls in our own lives. It might have been a health thing, it might have been something that someone said to you, but we've all had those types of wake-up calls. In saying that, I think, though, you'd be hard-pressed to find a more powerful wake-up call than we read of here in Exodus. The burning bush is an incredible wake-up call for Moses, isn't it? Or so you would think. Because Moses, if we go back a few weeks, Moses, we remember, was the baby who was saved out of the River Nile. So he was the supposed hero that God was going to give Israel. But then straight away by chapter 2, we see that it's all gone wrong. He's now a fugitive. He's had to escape Egypt. And now when we see him, we meet him again in Exodus 3, life has really moved on for him. His life is now, he's a Midianite shepherd with his own family. Indeed, life seems to have pretty much passed him by, because by the time we reach Exodus 3, Moses is about 80 years old. But at 80 years old, have we got any 80-year-old here? Sam, well done, represent. He's about to receive a wake-up call at 80 years old. Here, God reveals himself to Moses, and Moses to carry out his purpose. Calls Moses to carry out his purpose. So we have this revelation of God that is followed by a calling. That's the important thing we see today for us as well. Our calling. Our calling is always preceded by God's revelation as well. Indeed, our calling, our purpose, our identity is always rooted in the very identity of our God who has revealed himself to us as well. Not in a burning bush, but in Jesus. What it means is this. As Moses is called to go and be used by God to deliver Israel, we need to see what is most important is not who Moses is here, but actually who God is. And that's what Moses himself, he struggles to comprehend that. He struggles to understand it. And I think it can be the same for me and you sometimes. As God's people who are meant to be called and on mission for God. To also remember that what is important in that is not who I am, not who you are, but actually who our God is. His revelation, his presence, his power, his love, his identity, his name is what is important for all of us as we too are given a role to play in God's purposes, in his mission, in the world around us. So what we see in Exodus 3 and 4 is true for you and me, for our lives as well. And it's basically this. God is saying to Moses, and I think to us as well, you can because I am. God is saying, you can be part of my mission. You can bear fruit for me. You can find true purpose that I've given you because of who I am and what I am doing. That's what I say. You can because I am. So first, we see the incredible revelation of God here as he calls Moses. In God's revelation of himself, we see his fearsome holiness, don't we? Moses encounters this quite bizarre sight. A bush on fire, but it's not being consumed. But more than that, God himself speaks from within this bush. He tells Moses that where he now stands is holy ground. It's not because it's the particular location is special, but because the one and only holy God is present right there. This is the God we read earlier. This is the God of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. Moses realizes this. He realizes the fearsome holiness of God. What does he do? In fear, he hides his face. But we read on and we see that God, our holy God, reveals himself to Moses for a reason, for a purpose. It's a purpose that we've already been reminded of back in Exodus 1 and 2. We've already seen in Exodus 1 and 2 that God is a God who sees, God is a God who hears, God is a God who remembers his people, remembers his covenant towards them. And we read it there, Rebecca read it out. He repeats this promise to Moses again, doesn't he? He reminds Moses of his promise that he's going to rescue the Israelites, God's people. He's going to bring them out of Egypt into the promised land. And that's where Moses comes in now. God calls Moses to be part of it. Exodus 3:10. God says, so now go, I'm sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. So the Holy God reveals himself to Moses because he's calling Moses to fulfill this mission, to carry out this covenant promise and rescue to his people. Think about it. After his own 40 years of wandering in the wilderness, which we see as we read on in Exodus, the Israelites do themselves, but now it's Moses who's been wandering the wilderness for 40 years. Moses is now himself met by God, given this mission to go and rescue the Israelites from slavery in Egypt. And so the rest of the passage today, chapter 3 and chapter 4, we see this conversation between God and Moses. It's not a planning meeting. We already have one of them today. It's not Moses preparing himself to obediently take on God's call. Unfortunately, that's not what we see here either. Instead, as we read on in this conversation, what we see is we see a flawed man who is full of doubts, full of excuses, but God responds each time to graciously show Moses that his doubts are unfounded. That even though, think about it, even though he's talking to a burning bush that isn't burning, even though he's amazingly talking to the holy God of the universe, Moses still hasn't understood here the fundamental truth of his calling, his purpose, which is God saying, you can, Moses, because I am. And I think within this conversation, we can place ourselves as well. As we have encountered God ourselves, God reveals himself through Jesus Christ. As we've been given a way back to our awesome and holy God, we need to all consider what that means for our calling, for our purpose, for our identity. Where we can live life in Christ, we can live a life for God that doesn't need to give in to doubt, that doesn't need to make excuses, but can know that God's call on my life and your life is also, you can, because I am. So let's step through this conversation. Let's look at, discover how, like Moses, our identity and our calling needs to be really all about the revelation and work of God himself. Not my own merit, not your own merit or strength, but his. I think at the heart of everything we see Moses say here is him basically saying, God, I don't have what it takes. And everyone will find out if you make me do this. I don't have what it takes, and everyone's going to find that out. It's really the heart of Moses' doubts and excuses. This fear of being exposed and rejected. Now, let's be honest. Isn't that the fear that you and I so often have when it comes to God's calling on us as his children, as his church? But see here how God responds each time Moses gives another doubt, another doubt, another doubt. Because it speaks to our own obedience. It speaks to our own mission as God's people. So let's take a look at this conversation. First, Moses says, I'm not qualified. He says to God, I'm not qualified. And God's reply is, are you kidding? Moses, you can, because I am. Take a look at chapter 3, verse 11 to 12. But Moses said to God, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? And God said, I will be with you, and this will be the sign to you that it is I who have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you will worship God on this mountain. So for Moses, his qualification, he says, I'm not qualified, but God's saying his qualification to carry out God's purposes doesn't and shouldn't lie within him, within himself. No, no, no. It lies in the incredible truth, the promise from God that we see there, that I am with you. See, for Moses and for us, the presence of God in his life is the only qualification needed. But Moses doubles down, doesn't he? He says, I'm not qualified. And next up he says, no, no, but wait a minute, God, I'm not knowledgeable enough. What am I going to say? I don't have all the facts. I don't have all the answers. I don't have all the information. And God's reply again is, are you kidding, Moses? You can, because I am. Take a look at verses 13 to 15. Moses said to God, suppose I go to the Israelites and say to them, the God of your fathers has sent me to you, and they ask me, what is his name? Then what shall I tell them? God said to Moses, I am who I am. This is what you're to say to the Israelites. I am, has sent me to you. God also said to Moses, say to the Israelites, the Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob, has sent me to you. This is my name forever. The name you shall call me from generation to generation. So we see Moses go, I can't do this. He says, God, I need more facts. But see God's response? God doesn't respond by giving Moses simply a bunch of knowledge, does he? No, God responds by showing Moses himself, by showing more of God. God doesn't hand over this neat kind of spiral-bound folder full of facts and strategies and a bit of a timeline and strategies of what about to happen when he goes to Egypt and how it's all going to work out and all that stuff. Instead, God simply says, no, no, no. I am. Moses, I am. God is saying, Moses, you don't need to know everything. Trust. What you need to know is me. Not just informationally, but relationally, to know that I am. That I am already proven and trusted as the God of the universe. That I am unchanging in my faithfulness and power. You don't need more information of how things are going to unfold, Moses. You simply need more and more and more of me. Know my name, he's saying. That's the saying, know my identity. Know me, know my power, know my faithfulness. The same God of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob is the same faithful God who continues now to powerfully carry out his promises to his people. So he's saying, when you head back to Egypt with this mission, just point to me. Just talk about me, the great I am. Is that a good enough answer for Moses? Not yet. Moses keeps going with his doubt and his excuses. So he said, I'm not qualified. He said, I'm not knowledgeable enough. Next up, he says, oh, but God, I'm not credible enough. No one's going to actually listen to me. No one's going to believe me. And God's reply again is, are you kidding? No, 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 Moses, you can because I am. Take a look at chapter 4, verses 1 to 7. Moses answered, "What if they do not believe me or listen to me and say, 'The Lord did not appear to you'?" Then the Lord said to him, "What is that in your hand?" "A staff," he replied. The Lord said, "Throw it on the ground." Moses threw it on the ground and it became a snake, and he ran from it. Then the Lord said to him, "Reach out your hand and take it by the tail." So Moses reached out and took hold of the snake, and it turned back into a staff in his hand. "This," said the Lord, "is so that they may believe that the Lord, the God of their fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob has appeared to you." Then the Lord said, "Put your hand inside your cloak." So Moses put his hand into his cloak, and when he took it out, the skin was leprous. It had become as white as snow. "Now put it back into your cloak," he said. So Moses put his hand back into his cloak, and when he took it out, it was restored like the rest of his flesh. So we see here Moses says, I'm not a credible person to carry out this mission. He says, no one's going to take me seriously. No one's going to, not even the Israelites, are going to believe my words when I say the Lord has appeared to me. And God replies, no, Moses, they will take me seriously. Because I am the God who acts. I am the God who demonstrates his saving power for all to see. And then we see straight away, God gives Moses kind of a little taste, doesn't he? A sampler of his saving power, of his enormous credibility that he's going to show. God transforms Moses' staff into a snake. And soon as we read on, we see it again, don't we? We will see it happen in Pharaoh's court as a sign of God's power over all the other political and spiritual powers of the world. Remember, the staff that turns into a snake swallows the other snakes. God, total power. But at the same time, we see the second, you know, this is how bad Moses is here. He has to give him another sign. He then inflicts a skin disease, doesn't he? And then he heals them in an instant. And again, I think it points forward to the plagues of judgment to come, but also to God's ability to heal and cleanse his people, to rescue them. And as we read on, we haven't read it here tonight, but God points towards other powerful acts. He points towards the time where he will soon turn the water into blood. Again, showing his power over life and death. So God says, Moses, your credibility doesn't lie within you. I'm the one who will powerfully show my own credibility, my own power. Now, you might think after seeing those two things, imagine, you know, hand in, hand out, you might think Moses has got the picture yet. Has he? Moses seems to be clutching at straws as he brings one final doubt to God. Finally, he said, "I'm not qualified, I'm not knowledgeable enough, I'm not credible enough," and now he says, "Oh, and I'm not skilled enough." And God's reply again is, "Are you kidding, Moses? You can, because I am." Take a look at chapter 4, verse 10 to 12. Moses said to the Lord, see how he speaks? He speaks very nicely, doesn't he? Moses says, "Pardon your servant, Lord. I have never been eloquent, neither in the past nor since you have spoken to your servant. I am slow of speech and tongue." The Lord said to him, "Who gave human beings their mouths? Who makes them deaf or mute? Who gives them sight or makes them blind? Is it not I, the Lord? Now go. I will help you speak and will teach you what to say." So Moses says, "I'm not skilled enough, God. I'm not a good talker. I'm not eloquent enough." And God simply says, "Moses, that mouth of yours, I gave it to you. Moses, I'm the one who will give you the words. I'm the one who gives people hearing. I'm the one who gives people sight. I'm the one who gives people understanding. Yes, Moses might not speak well, and as we will see as we read on in Exodus, often the Israelites don't listen well. Pharaoh doesn't either, but God will still achieve his purposes. God will still give his chosen person the right words to speak. God will still open blind eyes and deaf ears to see and hear his truth. Now, sadly, as we read on in the rest of chapter 4 there, this conversation actually ends with Moses still refusing, still pleading to not be the man for the job. And God is angry with Moses. But even though his anger burns, God shows Moses even more grace by giving him his brother Aaron to help speak for him. But for us, there's a question here of how we respond to God, how we respond to his call on our lives, his purpose for our lives. How do you and I respond? Because the list of doubts that Moses presents to God here, I'm not the right person for the job, I'm not qualified, I'm not knowledgeable enough, I'm not credible enough, I'm not skilled enough. Now stop for a minute. Does any of that sound familiar at times to you and me? Are these the kind of doubts, are these the kind of excuses that we experience when it comes to God calling us, when he gives us his mission as his people, as his church, as his children, as his ambassadors to the world around us? Because intrinsic for us, intrinsic to following Jesus, is the call on our lives to be disciples who make disciples. Intrinsic to our faith is to live in light of what Jesus has done for us by declaring it to the world around us. But so often we see that and we think the same way as Moses, don't we? We think the same way as Moses as he stands before the burning bush, as he speaks to the one and only Holy God. We say to the burning bush ourselves, we say to the Holy God, we say, sorry, I'm not the right man. I'm not the right woman for the job. There's got to be someone better. And I think that response, that reaction, is often born from a place of genuine humility. I actually think that's what Moses begins with here, a humility, where he's humbly saying, God, I'm not good enough for this call, for this purpose, this mission that you've given me. And Moses is right in a way, isn't he, in saying that? Moses is right in everything he says because we know that Moses is flawed. Moses is not qualified to take salvation to God's people. Moses is not wise enough or credible enough or skilled enough, and frankly, neither am I, and neither are you. We are incredibly weak, based on our own merit and strength. Humbly, none of us contain within us, on our own, the goods to live out God's calling and purpose and mission in our lives. But Moses, and perhaps you and me at times, in saying that, we've totally missed the point. Because what it's saying here is we're meant to move forward like Moses. God's calling us to move forward in our weakness, knowing that I can actually, because of him. I can because of the great I am. You can live for God. You can proclaim him. You can bear fruit for him. You can make disciples of the nations because the great I am is with you. Indeed, even more than Moses, he's with you. His spirit dwells within you. So it means you can live for God. You can declare him because of his mighty name, because he remains the unchanging God of faithfulness, power, and love. You can live for God, you can proclaim him because of his demonstrated power and love. We see it so much more than Moses and the Israelites get to, because we get to see his ultimate saving power and love demonstrated, acted out for you and me in the death and resurrection of Jesus. That is where God proves his absolute credibility and power to the world in Jesus. And you can live for God, you can proclaim him because he will work through even the weakness of your words, the deafness of people's ears around you, the blindness of people's hearts. He will work through all that weakness to bring about his glorious purpose, his saving purposes. You see, the wake-up call we need, just like Moses here, is not about going from tonight realizing, oh, I have inner strength. I can do this. I have the skill. I have the credibility. No, no, no. The wake-up call is in realizing who is truly at work. And who will use even you and me and our weak and feeble efforts to bring about salvation in this world? Just to declare it. We see it. Paul talks about it in 2 Corinthians. He says it like this. He says, but we have this treasure in jars of clay. We're like jars of clay. To show that this all-surpassing power is from God, not from us. So the question, I think, friends, is what doubts, what excuses do you and I use to be like Moses here and try and avoid God's mission, God's call on you as his child, as his ambassador, as a light that is meant to shine his saving truth to the world? Because all those doubts and all those excuses here in Exodus, God is saying, no, 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 they're irrelevant. Because they end up all being doubts. They end up all being excuses which actually point to you and me being the center of it all. Being the needed power, credibility, qualification, and skill. But we aren't. No, 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 we're to point to the God of the burning bush. The great I am. To our God of unfathomable power and love, who has already offered rescue through Jesus Christ. And in that, he calls you and me, everyone here tonight, he calls us as treasures in jars of clay to behold him, like we've been singing tonight, to point to him, to know him, to labor for him in the reality that as we take on the calling and his mission in our lives, that the great I am always says, I am with you. Oh, we see it, and I'll finish with this. We see it in Jesus' words. The Great Commission. Look at how it's framed. Matthew 28. This is our mission. This is our calling. But it's all about God. It says, then Jesus came to them and said, all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. That's where the credibility lies, in him. Therefore, you and me, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I've commanded you. And then it says this. This is why you can do this. This is why in our weakness as treasures in jars of clay, we can follow God and we can do his mission here in Bairnsdale and to the ends of the earth. Because Jesus says, and surely I am with you always to the very end of the earth.